Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morata.
This is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat as heard every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on Breakfast with Taylor. And we cover all sorts of releases. We cover releases that are going to streaming platforms but are debuting in cinemas early. And then we cover films that have the potential to be 4-hour uncut director's cut versions but in cinemas are only a paltry 2.5 hours long. But this episode does contain some very heated debate, which we'll get to in a moment. But we cover something a bit less heated, maybe even colder in terms of the terrain that's being filmed. A very strange new comedy, Simon, that you cover.
Yes, Nude Tuesday, a film from our Kiwi friends and family. A truly bizarre movie that I enjoyed, but actually explaining the making of it proves to be quite difficult. I hope that I can convey in the review itself what makes this film so unique and so strange. But we'll get to that when we get to it. First, we've got to look at a movie that its very existence seemed to enrage Taylor.
That's right. That's where the heated debate comes in. And it's none other than about the divisive auteur Baz Luhrmann, the person who made William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet, Moulin Rouge with The Great Gatsby. And they have a new film all about Elvis Aaron Presley, the biopic called Elvis.
There are some who'd make me out to be the villain of this here story.
Let's don't let a good thing die.
Are you born with destiny? Or does it just come knocking at your door?
He's a young singer from Memphis, Tennessee. Give him a warm hayride welcome. Mr. Elvis Presley.
Buttercup.
In that moment, I watched that skinny boy transform into a superhero.
It's 7:30, and that means it is time to check in with our movie squad. Tristan, good morning.
Good morning.
Simon, how you doing?
I'm doing so well. Taylor, how are you this morning?
I am excited. It's movie squad, which means it's close to the end of our week, but we get to do this delightful thing first. Tristan, I've already alluded this morning to giving the audience my thoughts and opinions about Baz Luhrmann, but let's hear yours first. Tell us about Elvis.
Well, that's right. We have a new film, a biopic about Elvis Aaron Presley, and it is called Elvis, and it's directed by Baz Luhrmann, the Australian filmmaker best known for, well, I mean, he's done, like you would say, over the course of his career, there's a small amount of films, but they're all big films. They're all kind of, I guess, barring the first one, maybe. But, Romeo and Juliet, or William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet, Moulin Rouge, Australia, and then The Great Gatsby, and now Elvis. And so you bring together two forms of gaudy spectacle, and it seems like a match made in movie heaven. I mean, firstly, you're alluding to Baz Luhrmann. I mean, like, he is a very divisive filmmaker. I mean, do you want to go first, Taylor?
Let Simon go first. Go on, Simon.
Well, you've both forced me into a position that I've had to take many times, which is the enthusiastic defender of Baz Luhrmann. And I'm also extremely conscious of the fact that my immediate predecessor in the movie squad, Paul Grace, had an iconic review of Australia back in, 2008? A takedown, effectively, yes, a pretty brutal one as well. But I am a big fan of Baz Luhrmann's work. I think he is, you know, he's an iconoclast. He's one of a kind. But what he's really great at is making these really electric, ecstatic movies that jump off the screen, you know, and going back to Strictly Ballroom, but also Moulin Rouge and even Australia. The first half of that movie is excellent, I think, and I'm excited by the fact that he's turning it into a miniseries because
that makes one person.
Yes, exactly. Well, because that movie was sort of two movies pushed together, and I like the idea of giving it a bit more time to breathe. But I am interested and I like his films because they are earnest, but they're kind of these incredible musical scrapbooks. And I even like how he approached The Great Gatsby and made it feel really alien and unreal and like this half-remembered dream, because that's what the book is, you know? And so I do think his form does fit the stories he's telling for the most part. I haven't seen Elvis yet, but coming up to its release, I really enjoyed The Get Down, his Netflix series. So I'm quite interested and excited by whatever he's going to put out.
We should have let you go second as a saving grace. I have no time for Baz Luhrmann. Like Australia, nah. Strictly Ballroom, nah. Romeo and Juliet, don't even get me started.
Whoa, really? That's usually one that's held in high regard.
I know. Like, that can only be surpassed in poor taste by the Zaffirelli version of Romeo and Juliet, which I thought was god-awful. This is like the strongest opinion I think I've ever had on Movie Squad. Yeah. The one saving grace was The Great Gatsby, but even still, the like Jack Clayton version, like the Mia Farrow, Robert Redford one, it still holds a place in my heart. So, you know, I'm not going in with highest of expectations for Elvis.
And is he? And look, I'll admit as well that I also need to pop a couple of Panadol about 20 minutes into every Baz Luhrmann film. But is it the intensity of it?
I love a good camp film, but I think he just takes it to this insane place, and it's like, this is just making a mockery of the classics.
Yes. No. Look, I guess I'm somewhere in between. Like, I have a real fondness for Romeo and Juliet as a film sort of that I grew up with, and then Moulin Rouge, and then sometimes the later films like Great Gatsby. I enjoy some parts of it, but then, you know, liking the novel, it does feel like his style is overkill and kind of ruins the sort of some of the themes, and particularly the employment of electro swing, maybe one of the least great subgenres of music throughout that movie was a misstep. But, you know, then he used Jay-Z throughout it as well. So very, very interesting. But, yeah, I mean, he is divisive, but, yeah, he is also this showman, and he has an identifiable style, particularly as an Australian filmmaker working in big blockbuster kind of Hollywood production. So, you can take him or leave him, but I think you have to respect him on some level, even if he is disrespectful to the classics or to maybe a general sense of fashion, if his TikTok account is anything to be believed. But very interesting comparison between his the style of his movies and the style of those TikToks. But so he's taking on Elvis, which is also kind of an iconic subject matter to explore, and one that has as much divisive reactions as him as a director, and also just like an enduring iconic legacy. I remember when they came out with those that Ones album, the of greatest hits of Elvis, and trying to listen to that like with fresh ears and feeling like I couldn't, because a lot of the Elvis songs are so ubiquitous and kind of like you just kind of grow up with them being secondhand nature. So what is he going to bring to this, you know, to someone who's been so much imitated and replicated? And one thing that no one probably anticipated was Tom Hanks looking the way he does in this film, where he's playing the role of Colonel Tom Parker. Now, I knew of Colonel Tom Parker and the legacy of that, you know, he kind of, you know, ruined Elvis's career to a degree in terms of some of his decisions. I didn't know that he was actually Dutch, or not an actual Colonel or an actual Tom or an actual Parker. And so the vision of Tom Hanks in this makeup and voice in the trailer did throw me off balance. And it is a very strange thing. He makes the Penguin, or Colin Farrell's makeup in the Penguin, look subtle in the way that he's been put together. And he is the kind of the guiding voice. He's the narrator. We open on him on his deathbed, jacked up with morphine in the 90s, looking down at a casino and then wandering through it as this ghostly figure telling the story of Elvis. So it sort of touches on all these things, Citizen Kane, The Wizard of Oz, and this, you know, rushes us into this, you know, overwhelming visual style. And it's all about Elvis. And it's, you know, a 2.5-hour epic that tries to cover everything, basically looks at his rise as a kind of rebellious figure with the way that his hips shook and how he inflamed desires and caused controversy as a young up-and-coming superstar. Then the kind of 60s period, particularly around the comeback special after a decade of making the same movie over and over again. And then his gaudy end years as a kind of mainstay on the Vegas stage. And he is played by Austin Butler, a kind of fresh face. I guess people might know him as Tex Watson, or the very sexy Tex Watson from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So this is a big role for a guy like him to do. And I thought he was great. Like, I've, you know, there's been a bit of a backlash about his method stylings to get to this point, and the fact that he's kind of talking in interviews like he is Elvis, even though I think he was born in Anaheim, California. But like, whatever he needs to do to get there, I think he's great. Like, he pulls off the mannerisms, but makes it kind of live and breathe rather than feeling like an imitation. And it is a biopic, so it's like Walk Hard level cliches on an epic right. But I was kind of worn out and won over by the film at a certain point. I like this film. I really enjoyed it, even though it's kind of bog-standard biopic cliches. It tries to fit everything in there. I think there's apparently a four-hour version that Baz Luhrmann's talking about that puts in some of the more, I guess, controversial elements, because this film does do that thing where it sort of sanitizes things. Everything is... Elvis is always on the right side of history. We don't get the sequence where he goes and visits President Nixon.
I was just going to ask, does the four-hour version have him being deputized by Nixon?
No, there's not the scene where he wants to meet him and have a handshake and do his best to thwart the hippie scourge.
Well, you don't need that, because there is the Nixon Elvis movie starring Kevin Spacey and Michael Shannon.
That's true. That's true. So look, and there's, you know, a great supporting cast, a lot of Australian actors, including David Wenham, Richard Roxburgh. But you know, the main show is really you know, Elvis, Austin Butler as Elvis, and then Tom Hanks's performance, which is strange and weird. But at a certain point, the Hanks charm does peer out like a couple of eyes looking out over this kind of monstrous costume. So I was kind of won over by this film. But look, we've talked about Baz Luhrmann style. I get this I think I already can sense if I ask you a question about this, Taylor, but I want to ask Simon first. You have not seen it, but what do you think about this idea of biopics? I mean, they're kind of been more in vogue after Bohemian Rhapsody's success. Do you think the Baz Luhrmann star will get you over the hurdle of those cliches?
Oh, it definitely will get me over the hurdle of wanting to see it. And I am pretty much entirely over, and have been for maybe decades, but you know, a long time, the idea of a biopic, you know, the birth to death biopic, biopic. I think Walk Hard, you know, killed it dead in a great way, in that that film is so funny and so spot on in its piercing nature. But even though I probably would have preferred a movie that actually just focused on a slightly older Elvis getting ready for the comeback special, like, I feel like that's the narrative, right? That's the the movie that makes sense to me. The Baz Luhrmann of it all will get me over the hill to want to watch the whole four-hour version that inevitably comes out, because I just want to see what he does with cliche. And that's what he's done throughout his career. You know, he's taken traditional forms. I mean, the books and plays that he's adapting here, Romeo and Juliet, The Great Gatsby, they have been done to death. That's kind of the interesting thing that he does with them. Yeah. And I'm curious as well, Catherine Martin does the costumes. You know, she is obviously fantastic and a collaborator of his and his partner. You know, how does the visual style, the production design, like, does it live up to what he's doing with the camera?
Well, it's interesting because it's all very iconography, to say the least. So it serves that, but it is kind of all heightened, and there are moments where you could read in more than there probably is, in terms of the way that you know, the androgyny and the way that he, you know, he comes out on stage in the pink suit, and the ways in which Baz Luhrmann tries to, you know, connect the effect that Elvis had to a contemporary audience who just would view him as kind of like an old fogey image. And so, yeah, dropping in things like a drop, like a bass drop, or, you know, including the contemporary artists that he's got on the current soundtrack, like Doja Cat, in these sequences that, like, much like his other films, kind of break the you know, the feeling of history or the kind of period perfect detail.
So you say Doja Cat is in the film?
No, you hear the music.
Oh, okay.
But you know, to see Elvis walk down Beale Street while hip hop is playing, you're like, you're going, what's going on here? But like, it's his attempt to try and kind of connect it to a contemporary audience. So some purists might be upset by that. And it's interesting, Taylor, what you were saying before about his approach to classic material. I mean, are you protective of Elvis? Do you have any kind of stake in Elvis being depicted, or you
don't
care?
No, I so don't. I think it's interesting there'll be a four-hour version of this, and if it doesn't include some of the more heinous parts of history, I'll be maybe a bit disappointed. It might be the Baz Luhrmann that draws and gets you over the line, Simon. For me, it is the Elvis that does get me over the line,
sure.
Although not a huge, massive Elvis fan. I'm curious to see which story or what kind of story is told. Just on the soundtrack really quickly, because we do have to play a track in a moment. Alongside Doja Cat, people like Eminem, our own Tame Impala, Stevie Nicks, and then Måneskin, which are like an Italian band, is the most bizarre like combination of people. Does the soundtrack work for you, Tristan?
It's at the fore is the Elvis material, and that kind of lives in the movie. But yeah, it does these moments of kind of mixing in, and there is an attempt to try and pay respect to the fact that Elvis was a white performer, but the fact that he kind of, his success was based on black artists. So this inclusion of trying to, I mean, it's still kind of in Elvis's corner. It doesn't completely hold him to account, like Public Enemies, like Fight the Power or something like that. But so there's an attempt. But yeah, I think for those looking for a critical take, we'll be left wanting. This is very sanitized, you know. So yeah, I mean, maybe this four-hour version will deal more with the complexities, but this is pretty much a kind of Elvis fan show.
Yeah, you have to sit through 4 hours of a Baz Luhrmann film.
Release the Luhrmann cut.
Oh, don't start. Let us know if you're heading out to see this. Elvis is in cinemas this week. My mum, the long-lost fourth member of the movie squad, has weighed in. She says Baz Luhrmann has to be nuts, but she loved Australia and will not be seeing Elvis. So make of that what you will.
Doctors, welcome. I would go stereo for the baby. Brunnen hot. Frukost, prognose eller utklutet okna. Jobb, grut og sex.
Gjør jeg godt det.
Simon, we're going to change pace now. We've spent so much time talking about Elvis this morning. Let's talk about Nude Tuesday.
Nude Tuesday is a new film from New Zealand that is truly bizarre just in its conceit, but kind of excitingly so. This has been written by Jackie Van Beek, who is a New Zealand comic and writer and actor who co-wrote The Breaker Operas, if you remember that from a few years ago, also starred in it with Madeline Sammy. And she stars in Nude Tuesday as well, opposite Damon Herriman, an Australian actor. She plays Laura. He plays Bruno. They're a married couple. They're in a rut. She's overworked, overextended. They've got two kids. He's not really engaged anymore. He's not really plugged in. He's also feeling emasculated. So on their anniversary, his mother, her mother-in-law, gifts them a weekend away at the Wunderla Retreat, which they discover upon arrival, basically a sex cult, run by a man named Bjorg, played by Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords. Now, what's bizarre about the conceit is that this is set in a fictional country that I'm not even going to try and pronounce. But the film opens with a zooming in on a fake version of the world map where somewhere between New Zealand and Australia, this nation exists. And the characters speak in a completely made-up language. For all intents and purposes, it's gibberish. And so Nude Tuesday is effectively a foreign language film. It just so happens that no one on Earth in history has ever spoken this language. That's the first kind of odd conceit to the movie. And Jackie Van Beek, who, like I said, wrote the film, has conceded, you know, when she came up with a story with the film's director, whose name is Amargan Ballantyne, also from New Zealand, they kind of acknowledged, like, the basic premise of this movie is conventional. You know what I mean? Like, it's not breaking the form. It's a married couple going through some strife. They try and breathe life into their marriage and they meet a whole bunch of kooky characters. We've seen that before. So how do you make it different? And they thought, well, let's make it a foreign film, but we'll just invent the language. But then the extra layer of insanity that they add to it is that they effectively handed over the reins of subtitling to third parties. And the film version, the theatrical release that is now in cinemas, has been subtitled by Julia Davis, who is a really funny, very weird English comic and actor. People will know her from Nighty Night and Gavin and Stacey. Tristan, I think you're a Julia Davis fan.
Yeah, she's... I've still not seen all of her work, but the recent show that she did was Sally Forever.
And oh, yes.
She is, yeah, has this very dark sense of humor. So I was very curious as to, like, how this would go in what seems to be kind of less dark and more kind of strange as a comedy.
Well, what makes this film ultimately, I think, really, really fun and interesting is that you've got Julia Davis as this interloper who's trying to kind of blow the film up through subtitles. So you've got this movie unfolding before you, and it's funny. You know, it looks funny. The characters are really engaged and invested in their silly antics and ultimately their full frontal nudity as it builds up to the titular Nude Tuesday. But you've got Julia Davis who kind of just zigs whenever you think the film is zagging, you know, and you discover the freedom that you can have with subtitles, even though she's constrained to the filmed narrative because she got this basically as it was cut and edited to subtitle. You can just see the moments where she's just opted for something that has completely shifted the tenor of the character's relationships, the narrative itself. And what's, again, the third layer of insanity here is Julia Davis has scripted the version that's in cinemas. It's a Stan movie. It's going to be on Stan in about 3 weeks' time, but it's another subtitled version by Celia Pacoya and Ronnie Cheng. and in different markets across the world, it's got local comedians and writers subtitling it for their own market. So I'm really keen to, you know, I don't know, I'll watch the whole thing, but I'll definitely skip through the Stan version because there are absolutely points of difference where I think Julia Davis has tried to blow up the plot, and I want to see how this other version kind of adapts to it. Now, Taylor and Tristan, I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on this. When I heard about the movie, I thought it was a bunch of bad ideas put on. It was a hat on a hat on a hat. Tristan, how do you feel about what Nude Tuesday could have been and what it sounds like it is?
Yeah, when I said that it was announced with some of the funding given to it by the governing bodies, I was like, oh, really? Like, you know, and, you know, whether that the kind of the gibberish language, is it kind of like the Swedish Chef in the Muppets that we're kind of getting jokes out of just like a nonsensical language that kind of borders on being offensive? But, you know, some of the people involved are funny. You know, Jermaine Clement, like as a kind of a sex guru, like that's a no-brainer. And yeah, the what you were saying about the Julia Davis level of subtitling, yeah, I'm more interested in seeing that version than possibly the Australian one.
Yeah, Taylor, how about you?
Yeah, much the same. I love Jermaine Clement too, so I'm keen just to, I mean, not understand him, but see him in this film. I'm curious, like, how do you film something like this without every cut or like every take just having to cut because everyone's laughing? Like, how do you convincingly speak gibberish? Are there actual scripts? Do they just get on?
No, it was scripted. So the idea of I think the idea of getting other people to subtitle it also came later.
Okay.
So there was absolutely a script to work with. And the language, I totally appreciate your point, and it's not Swedish Chef levels, but it is a kind of Swedish sounding language, you know.
Can you give us an example?
No. but there are, like, it does feel like it's been written the way that they write Elvish or right. Klingon, in the sense that there seems to be a language here. There are repeated words. And what's really, I think, refreshing about this tact is that because the subtitles are so truly sometimes bizarre, like the jokes that Julia Davis are like, I would have never thought of going in that direction, that you actually kind of tune out of the language itself and it sounds like a real foreign film. it sounds like a real foreign film that is just truly odd and very funny. But to the point you're making, Taylor, how do you not laugh your way through this? The film actually made me really respect, I guess, the vulnerability of making silly comedies. And we talked about Adam Sandler the other day about Hustle, a more serious film, obviously, compared to his goofier movies. And not to give them more credit than they need. But there is an element of, you know, you're putting yourself out there when you're being really silly in a movie. I think that's almost braver than doing an intensely dramatic role, doing what Austin Butler's doing in Elvis, maybe. And I definitely like this more than The Breaker-Upperers, which I was actually pretty cool on. I remember Caitlin was the breakfast host at the time. She loved it. I think it was her favorite film of the year. I thought it was just a touch too broad, whereas this one feels very specific. And that vulnerability was very endearing. And it made me take it more seriously and also found it funnier at the same time. So New Tuesday, I really enjoyed. Again, I can't vouch for the version that's going to be on stand in a couple of weeks. I can only vouch for the one that I've seen in cinemas now. But a really fun experiment. It's worth seeing, not because it's an experiment, but that does make it, I think, gives it an interesting wrinkle. And Jackie Van Beek and Damon Herriman. Damon Herriman also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as Charlie Manson and is also very funny. But Jermaine Clement, you know what you're going to get with Jermaine Clement playing a sex guru. He's basically played that role in Legion and I forget the full name, but the Beverly Loughlin movie. He's basically played sex gurus throughout his career. So he knows what he's doing.
He's at home.
He's very funny in this film.
Yeah, get to the cinema if you want to see the Julia Davis captioned version of Nude Tuesday. Otherwise, like Simon said, it'll be on Stan in a couple of weeks. Let us know what you reckon. 0405-921-921. That is Movie Squad for this week. Tristan and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you can always play catch up. The Movie Squad podcast is available at the RTR website and wherever else you get your podcasts from.
So there we have it. Two very different movies, but very interesting movies to discuss. And I look forward to, well, at some stage catching a Nude Tuesday online. And hopefully Stan has the kind of option where you can choose maybe subtitles. And I hope to talk to you when you get to see Elvis, whenever that is.
It will happen. It may not happen in cinemas. Mm. And that's more of just an administrative thing rather than a preference. But I'm looking forward to seeing it. And I'm really genuinely excited for the 6-hour Australia cut. Because I haven't seen it since it came out in cinemas.
Sure.
We talked during the review about Paul Grace's incendiary takedown of the film. But Tristan, I don't recall your perspective on it.
I think I liked aspects of it, but definitely I agree with you that that film feels like two movies in one. Mm-hmm. And there's a definite kind of point where you feel like, okay, this is the next movie. You know, we've gone from, Red River to Gone with the Wind. And it feels about that long in terms of its total runtime. I don't know if I'd ever revisit it, but rewatching The Great Gatsby a while back, and yeah, there were moments that really are great, and then other ones that just feel like overkill, but that's, you know, take it or leave it, that's the style, and definitely Elvis, I think, as a subject matter, there's a certain nice match. I can imagine, you know, Martin Scorsese, something like The Aviator, where it's a bit more kind of, a bit more rugged, or a bit more kind of what we would want from a classic filmmaker, but here, just the head spinning, you know, editing, the smash cuts, the, you know, it's overwhelming, but I think that's probably the best way to do it, particularly with a life as kind of varied and wild and interesting as Elvis. So yeah, look, hopefully there's the longer cut and we get to compare the the various versions of Elvis meeting Nixon, because there's also, I'd recommend, there's a Showtime movie, I think from the 90s, where Bob Gunton plays Nixon and someone who I don't know plays Elvis, but I remember watching that, which I think is also called Elvis Meets Nixon, and finding that being very very funny and right, but I've not seen the more recent one starring Michael Shannon and
I don't think either of us are going to rush out to watch that one, even though we do love Michael Shannon. Or you can watch the Drunk History episode where Jack Black plays Elvis. I forget who plays Nixon in that one, but
yeah.
Wild story.
And particularly, let's not forget from Walk Hard, which starred none other than Jack White as Elvis in a very funny 2-minute performance, which, yeah, it's a shame we didn't get to see further of him. But yeah, if you've not seen Walk Hard, please rent that and check that out, because yeah, that's a good primer on any biopic you might get to see. But and I still haven't seen, I was as big as a John Carpenter fan I am, I've still not seen the 70s miniseries he directed, which starred Kurt Russell as Elvis.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm aware of that and have never seen it either. And I think I always get it mixed up with, is it Gary Busey who plays...
Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly, yeah. So, but I was thinking of the Gary Busey film where, does he play Jerry Lee Lewis?
Oh, that's the Jerry Lee Lewis one is Dennis Quaid, Great Balls of Fire.
Thank you. Yeah.
And apparently there's Ethan Coen's film as a solo director is a documentary about Jerry Lee Lewis, yes, which apparently has debuted.
Just came out of Cannes, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting to reconcile some of these these iconic singers with maybe some of the politics of today, which this yeah, that's true. And then which the Baz Luhrmann film I think takes a very kind of doesn't really get into the complexities of the Elvis and Presley, Elvis and Priscilla relationship. But yeah, there you have it.
You can't
print the myth. You know,
you can't do that in 2.5 hours. You need 4 hours.
That's right. Well, there you go. Some other films to explore. And funny to think of a time when Gary Busey was Oscar nominated, as he was for Buddy Holly story. But thank you. It's always a great pleasure to chat with you and to Taylor every Friday morning.